Okay, the onion is over. You can start listening again. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. I named it after myself because of, you know, I don't know. I want you to remember my name so that you'll go, oh, yeah, that guy. You should listen to that guy. It's my show, Scott Horton Show, libertarian foreign policy mostly, which means I'm against it. I oppose it, and I explain why you should, too. That's basically the thing. Oh, and also, typically, I interview really great journalists about all the real great journalism that they do. Problem is, I don't got none for you today, it doesn't look like. I don't care. I still got plenty I can look at and talk about. Even if I don't have any interviewees, I still might hear back from somebody or other. Oh, yeah, maybe Eric Margolis will do the show. That seems probably likely, right? Anyway, it's my show, the Scott Horton Show. And may have Eric Margolis on. He wrote a thing about Nigeria, believe that or not. I forgot to read it already, believe that or not. I saw it, though, that there was such a thing. Anyway, I got tons of news to cover. I got the Iran deal. I got Islamic State. I got police state stuff. And some other stuff. Yemen. Did I say Yemen? Yemen. All right. And then, yeah, but here's a little bit of housekeeping to get out of the way for the show. First of all, I'm very happy to say that this Saturday at the LBJ, I'll pause so you can spit, law school at UT here in Austin, Texas, Jacob Hornberger is going to be hosting a couple of people you might want to come and see, Ron Paul, Glenn Greenwald, and Radley Balco. And they're going to be talking about why to oppose the state, well, the worst parts of it especially. Obviously, the wars, Ron, the surveillance state, Glenn, and the militarized police state, Radley. Isn't that great? It is great. And I can't wait. That's this Saturday at 1 o'clock. The Future Freedom Foundation is hosting this giant thing. You can find out all about it at fff.org. And I'm really excited about it. In case you're only marginally familiar with any of these people, Ron Paul is the greatest parliamentarian in the history of mankind. He believes in liberty more and better than any other person in any other lawmaking body in the history of all of humanity. He is the greatest American hero, and he has done more to spread true, I mean, really old, distilled, better than Franklin and Jefferson liberalism to the world. The Jim Ostrowski definition, libertarianism, to the planet than any other person ever, ever. He's the greatest hero ever. And I know he's not a perfect hardcore anarchist on every single issue, and some of his immigration votes bother me and things like that, but man, I don't care about that. He's the greatest hero that ever existed, Ron Paul. In case you're unfamiliar. And then there's Glenn Greenwald, who he's a liberal in the new kind of liberal sense. But you know what? He's pretty damn good on the part of democracy that implies protections for individual rights. And he's a lawyer, and he's one of these lawyers who's a Jew who likes to defend Nazis and their right to speak freely because he understands the principle that if the Nazis aren't allowed to have their say, then all the rest of our rights are in question too. So yes, by all means, these stupid, evil National Socialists ought to be able to preach their hatred. And if they can't, then this ain't America. That's the kind of liberal Jew Glenn Greenwald is. One who fights like a mad dog for the Bill of Rights. And he's been great for a long, long time. And so, yeah, he's good on, I think, all of them. I don't know if he's good on the 10th Amendment, but I'm pretty sure he's good on the 2nd, just as a matter of principle. It's the law. So, what? The Constitution created this government in the first place, so what law that contradicts the Constitution could be considered a law by a reasonable lawyer. None, of course. So he's pretty damn good. And then Radley Balco is the foremost expert on the militarization of police in this country. And that ain't to sell Will Griggs short. He has kind of a different niche. I mean, he certainly covers militarization a lot. But Radley Balco, and you'll notice about none of these people, even including Hornberger, are anarchists. They're just, but they are radicals. They certainly mean it. And Balco is just great on the militarization of the police. And, you know, I think he even, you know, turned on a certain segment of the old establishment that they decided to give him a spot at the Washington Post, which means he's the most libertarian person to ever write in the Washington Post by a long shot. And he does cover civil forfeiture and all kinds of, you know, prison problems and different violations of our rights. But his expertise is The Warrior Cop. That's his book, Rise of the Warrior Cop. And he's really good. So this thing is just going to be great. The Future Freedom Foundation, FFF.org. Find out all about it. It's this Saturday at 1 o'clock Texas time here at the LBJ Law School at the University of Texas. Not here as in I'm there, but yeah, here in Austin. You understand. Okay, and then here's some more bookkeeping thing real quick. The Liberty Radio Network had a satellite over Africa. And then they lost it. The satellite's still there, but LRN signal is not bouncing off of it. But you could help to change that. And the thing of it is we've all gotten a pretty good response. And there are quite a few radio stations. I think my understanding, if I'm not overstating it, I'm pretty sure what Ian told me was that they could hear us all the way across sub-Sahara, the top of, you know, just below the Sahara Desert area of Africa there. From, you know, I guess approximately, this isn't a direct quote or anything, but I think he was basically saying, from Nigeria to Somalia. There are radio stations playing the Liberty Radio Network over there. And, man, that's really cool. And it could be again with a little bit of help from you. So stop by LRN.FM. It's in the right-hand margin there. It's seems to me an incredibly important project, obviously. I'm self-interested on the matter, but there you go. And then one more thing before we get to all the good and bad news. And there is good news, and that is the Kickstarter. Don't give up. A lot of you people gave a lot of money to this Kickstarter. I barely even had to ask, and you came through in spades and whatever figures of speech you like. And here's the thing about it. These things take time, apparently, for Kickstarter to get the money kicked over. And then Matt Perry, who hosted the thing, put it all on in the first place. And Carlos, the supercomputer genius guy, have both had illnesses in their families that they have to take care of. I'm not even lying. Like, really, I think it's just their sons each had high fevers, one after the other. And anyway, you know, Carlos, the computer genius, he's been very patient with us. We really recruited him for this project a long time ago. It took us a while to even get it started at all, so... I like being patient back. And then, but I owe you guys rewards. Some of you get books and some of you get commodity discs and other things like that. And I will have you know that I am not a deadbeat unless I owe you for my wife's medical bills, in which case, yeah, you might not get paid for a while. But for the rest of you, especially, you know, obviously you guys contributing to what allows me to even think of ever paying off her medical bills, this show, people who are helping to support my work, I am getting you your commodity discs, your copies of Philip Drew Administrator, A Story of Tomorrow, and whatever other goodies and blowback I promised you for supporting the Kickstarter. Thank you very much. The project is going to happen. Now that we've seen all this controversy with Google, did you read Dan Sanchez's ultimate article about Google censorship of antiwar.com through their, well, pseudo-censorship, you know what I mean, through their AdWords thing. I guess it's a question whether I'll make any money over it. I hope they don't just blacklist me, but the project is to put all of the interviews on YouTube, 3,700 of them. So thank you, everyone, and count on me, I promise. It's going to be rad. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. And you know what? I did have one more piece of housekeeping for you here before we get to the bad news, and that is that this show, at least, is ditching The Onion. And soon. I sent a folder full of sound bites and another folder full of musics to one of them audio genius dudes who knows how to mix all those things together, and he's just going to make minute-long things, I don't know how many of them, out of these sound bites. And you know, it's going to be Cotton Hill. It's going to be good. You know what? You may not like it, but I don't care. It's got to be better. Whatever he comes up with has got to be better than The Onion. I am so over it. I know you are too. So, let me get rid of that crap. You know what they could do for their newscast? They could just go back and read The Onion from, like, 6 years ago or 8 years ago or something, and then it would be funny. But anyway. All right, Eric Margolies will be on the show in a little while from now. So, you'll want to listen to that. We're going to talk about Nigeria and about Yemen as well. So, that's good, because, man, I need people to talk about Yemen with. And Eric Margolies, he's been there, of course. He knows. All right, so, now on to the good news. Again, Dear Leader had John Kerry sign a deal with the Iranians over their nuclear program. It's a huge thing, and there are some recent developments and some other stuff, and there are people listening who don't know about it, and so, I guess I'll say, first of all, that basically the deal is America will, and the EU and the UN will lift sanctions if Iran expands their inspections regime under the IAEA safeguards agreement to the nth degree. We're talking about the additional protocol plus modified subsidiary agreement 1.3.1 and the rest of them too, all of those expanded. So that it'll be womb-to-tomb inspections from the mines to the Yellowcake mining refining facility to the Isfahan facility where they, I always say that wrong, I'm sorry, Iranians, where they convert the Yellowcake into uranium hexafluoride gas, and then the centrifuges, the factories where they make the centrifuges, the storage where they're going to put all the shut-off centrifuges, expanded inspections everywhere, permanent inspectors and snap inspections at all nuclear facilities where any nuclear material exists or is being used in any way. They're going to, so that's the expanded inspections. Then they're going to curtail their program. They're going to take the core of their AROC reactor, A-R-A-K, AROC reactor out completely and replace it and make it a light water reactor that will only produce, it will produce plutonium as a waste product, but completely polluted with isotopes and things that will screw it up and make it useless for weapons purposes. That's why how light water reactors are designed in the first place, is to accomplish that, so that they don't produce weapons fuel as waste. All right, and then so that's that. They're going to take their Fordo facility, the big pretend scandal of the facility at COM, and they're going to convert that to simply a research facility, again, inspected from eyebrow to the bottom of their tippy toes. So there will be no uranium enrichment there. The only uranium enrichment will be going on at Natanz. They're cutting their number of centrifuges in half, and they're getting rid of the ones. They're not just unplugging them. They're going to put them in storage somewhere else under the lock and key of the IAEA and snap inspections of the IAEA. And they'll only have 5,000 spinning, and they've agreed to completely forego the 20% enrichment that they need for their medical isotope reactor. They already have plenty from all the time when America wouldn't negotiate with them. And also they could, I guess if they run out within the time period, then they could buy some from the Russians or the French. So there's that. they've agreed to limit their enrichment to 3.67% uranium-235, which is far short of the plus 90% required to set off a bomb. And they've pushed what they call their breakout time, which is not their time to make a bomb. It's their time to have enough fuel to make a bomb to at least a year, so that if they withdrew from the Non-Proliferation Treaty under the next Ayatollah, and the current Ayatollah is dying, by the way, he has cancer. If the next Ayatollah says, screw this, we're getting out of the Non-Proliferation Treaty and we're kicking the IAEA out of the country and we're going to start making bombs now, we'd have a year at least to get around a bombing the crap out of them. Not that I'm saying that's okay. If LBJ didn't bomb China to keep them from getting nuclear bombs, when Mao Zedong was like, I'd be happy to lose half the population to China. I'm a communist. What do I care about that? I starve them to death by the tens of millions every day, dude. Nuke me. And they still didn't do a preemptive strike on China. If that's okay, you know, in that sense, then it's perfectly okay with, Iran too. But anyway, I'm just saying hypothetically the breakout time has been pushed to a full year. And then I'm still not clear on whether that's supposed to be enough uranium to make an implosion bomb or enough uranium to make a gun type nuke, because the much simpler to design uranium bomb would be a gun-type nuke like the kind that they killed Hiroshima with back in 1945, vaporizing 200,000 people to death in a moment after they'd already won. But anyway, they need much more uranium to make one of those. It's a much simpler device, but they need much more. Now, if we're just going with the hypothetical tiny little implosion device, well, that's not that much uranium required to do it, assuming it was weapons grade, etc. But the science and the capability for the Iranians to set that off are far out. They would need their own Sandia National Laboratory and years' worth of experiments to be able to set off a miniaturized implosion system bomb. And so, you know, when they say breakout, you say, yeah, it's a little vague for me, guys. Hell, they've got enough uranium in the ground for 1,000 H-bombs. But, yeah, so their breakout capability is what? It's a sliding scale of nonsense. Anyway, so that's the deal. Expanded inspections in exchange for lifted sanctions, expanded inspections and a complete curtailing of their nuclear program to limit any path to a bomb whatsoever. Okay, so that's the deal. So Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, reiterates, I'm trying to kill the Iran deal. I'm going to do everything I can, in his words, to kill the deal, he said on TV yesterday morning, and I didn't watch him. He was on all three or four or whatever many Sunday morning news shows yesterday, doing everything he can. And at this point, I kind of welcome it. I think that he's flailing all over the place, that he's already lost, and that he's making himself look like a real jackass, and therefore is making others who line up with him look like real jackasses too. Now, I know it ain't all just about PR. It's also about who's going to fund your next campaign or the guy who's running against you in the next primary too. And so that's a big deal. But when Netanyahu says the nuclear deal must include recognition of Israel, he's moving the goalposts into shut up, stupid land. Everybody's laughing. No one takes that seriously at all. Give me a break. Got nothing. Just be quiet. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel Lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back. All right, let me not spend the whole segment on the Israel thing. I mean, Israel and Iran nuclear deal thing. I'll try to get through this quick. Saudi Arabia welcomes Iran nuclear deal, seeks region free of weapons of mass destruction statement. Now, that's just their PR department put out a thing. I don't know. But I sure like the sound of that instead of pissing and moaning and crying about it and claiming that, oh, no, America is tilting away from us and toward Iran and all this, which isn't really true. They're saying, great, they're taking it for what it is. An end to the fake crisis that the West has generated. Well, the West, America, at the behest of Israel, has generated over Iran's nuclear program. This issue is put to bed, and the Saudis are saying fine. Just last week, everyone was saying, oh no, the Saudis are going to make nuclear weapons now. Yeah, I don't think they are. As though the deal was to go ahead and let Iran have nuclear weapons, so that's going to make everyone else go and make nuclear weapons. I got in a big argument on Twitter with some idiot about that a couple weeks ago. Wait, right now, they have a safeguarded nuclear program. We're about to make a deal where they adopt the additional protocol and 10,000 other restrictions. And that's going to make war with Saudi more likely. That's going to make Saudi more paranoid about Iran's bomb. When they could just ask for a Pakistani bomb or two and have them in their hand. Give me a break, dude. You ever notice how the people who are defending the war party position never have any idea what they're talking about? The things they say don't make sense from one sentence to the next. The Saudis come out and go, yeah, you know what I think we should do? We should declare a weapons of mass destruction free zone. Israel, who's their ally, really, in a lot of ways. They said, the Council of Ministers expressed hope for attaining a binding and definitive agreement that would lead to the strengthening of security and stability in this region of the world. It added that, this is Reuters reporting here, it added that Saudi Arabia hoped a final deal would pave the way for a, quote, Middle East and the Arabian Gulf region free of all weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons. So, they are calling out their Israeli allies, who are the only government in the region keeping the region from being a nuclear weapons-free zone. And, you know, that might sound kind of, naive. But they actually have those. They are declared nuclear weapons-free zones, continental treaties, in Africa and in South America. I didn't even know that. I only found that out recently. They actually have agreements in writing that we will keep this whole region a nuclear weapons-free zone. There, I guess, regions of Asia, too, where, I guess the Kazakhs still had some nukes after the fall of the Soviet Union. They gave them up to Russia. So there are nuclear weapons-free zones, official ones, on the planet Earth. And all we would need to have a nuclear weapons-free zone, really all we ever needed since, 1991 and the end of Saddam Hussein's chemical weapons and nuclear weapons programs, although it was minor and nothing to be upset about at the time. But anyway, since 1991 and the end of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction programs, the only thing in the way of the Middle East being a weapons of mass destruction free zone, of course, is Israel. And I don't know about their chemical and germ weapons programs, but sure, I bet you they got them. Dollars to dimes, if you want. And they certainly have nuclear weapons, including thermonuclear weapons, hydrogen bombs, which you may underestimate the difference. You know, I don't know. Who knows the difference between these numbers and those numbers? But seriously, guess the difference between 40 kilotons and 40 megatons. Yeah, I think you might just, why don't you go and look on the YouTube? Say, YouTube, show me some thermonuclear devices going off, if you would, please. Fission is when you cut a fission explosion in a weapon. Is when you set off a chain reaction that separates heavy radioactive uranium or plutonium atoms and releases the energy within. Fusion is when you do that to make it as hot as the sun so that then you can fuse hydrogen atoms, the lightest kind of atoms, together and release even more energy. And Israel's got those, and they got nuclear submarines, and they're like a little American empire over there, only Israeli, that's all. They're the ones with the weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East. Not Iran, they never were. And by the way, do you ever watch Fox News? I saw John Bolton on there this morning, and he was saying that, well, you know, this isn't going to stop them. Don't the conservatives ever get tired of being lied to? The Iranians never were making nuclear weapons, and now they're extra double super guaranteed to be sure to not be making nuclear weapons. So how come he can't just say, you know, I think they might be able to sneak out and make a nuclear weapon anyway somehow or something and make some kind of argument based on the actual reality of the planet that we live on? You know, he wrote a thing in the New York Times last week saying, oh, well, you know, it's widely agreed that the National Intelligence Estimate of 2007 saying that the Iranians weren't making nuclear weapons is false and ridiculous. Oh, it's widely agreed that, huh? Where? At the Washington Institute for Near East Policy? Or the ballroom where you're giving your speech to the Mujahideen e-cult communist terrorist cult for a few $100,000? That's funny because on the National Intelligence Council, it's still widely agreed that they stand next to the NIE of 2007. As they have in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2000, right now. Please give us a break. Number one cure for conservatism, I think. Well, liberalism too, but just learn anything about anything and then listen to what your intellectual leaders tell you you're supposed to think about it. And then you'll catch them. Hey, that's not right. They already have the additional protocol, Mr. Bolton. How come none of the things you say are ever truthful? I don't, seems kind of noteworthy to me. All right. Now that I'm out of time, I'll go ahead and move on from the nuclear deal to ISIS. Oh, man, I don't have time to talk about ISIS. Here, let me just mention a couple of cop stories real quick before this break. Obama denounces Snowden, says he's got an executive order. And some guys over on Reddit figured that it must apply to Edward Snowden and that they were being banned from donating to Edward Snowden. So they had a rally to an online Reddit kind of a rally to Edward Snowden's cause and sent him a bunch of bitcoins. In less than 24 hours, nearly 200 unique bitcoin donations were sent to the official Snowden Defense Fund. You can read all about this at cointelegraph.com. The guys on Reddit said, oh yeah, Mr. President, we can't give money to Edward Snowden, huh? Watch us give money to Edward Snowden. And what are you going to do about it? So you kind of got to love that, don't you think? And then in other police state news, this one's no victory. Cop can't remember climbing on car hood and firing the last 15 shots of a 137-bullet barrage that killed an unarmed couple. And, yeah, man. After the whole thing was over, he jumped up on the hood and shot the couple 15 more times. Oh, and then this one's at CNN. Dogs killed over unpaid fines. You call this a free country, put your hat over your heart at the ball game and all that crap still. You always will. Sucker. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betray their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the Off-Now project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 11th in Las Vegas. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Coming up, Eric Margulies on the wars in Nigeria, an election in Nigeria, and the war there. And then also Yemen. So that should be good. The great Eric Margulies, he's good on pretty much everything. And yeah, I'm sorry, I was running out of time for that segment when I mentioned this, but really, go check this out. It's at money.cnn.com. Dogs killed over unpaid fines. So, in other words, lady's dog gets out. They are not able to track him down until, oh, it's been a few days. Well, now you owe us $180 to get your dog back. Well, but I don't have $180. Oh, well, we're going to murder your dog then, says the government of Stockton, California, and so many others, as it says here. That's who your government is, the one that you worship more than, that you love more than your own family. They're puppy killers. They're butchers and murderers. Let's see. I hate lawyers. I hate lawyers. But once they become congressmen, they only care about me. You think, somehow. The government, they're the worst people in the society, come together to aggress against you. How can anyone be a conservative or a liberal in this society? Are you crazy? It's a lot better than Russia. Really? America locks up a much higher percentage of its population than the Russian government even does. And yeah, you're right. The Russian government is run by a bunch of murderers too. But to favorably compare freedom in America to other places, you got to start defining things more narrowly. Well, you know, in Texas, there's no income tax. Yeah, but they execute more people than China. So there are trade-offs. That's what I'm saying. You are not free. They will murder your dog. They'll kick in your door in the middle of the night and murder you for waking up. Oh, but you just love them. Yeah, but who would ever take care of us if we had freedom? All liberals and conservatives say in unison. It actually sounds kind of nice, the harmony and the melody and whatever the... I don't really understand musical stuff that well, but... Wow, to hear 300 million Americans say, yes, but we love government... All together, it's got a special kind of a resonance, you know? Yeah, they murder dogs, and yeah, they murder people, and they're murderers, but we love them. All right, anyway, speaking of Americans, the reason that the Middle East is burning, the reason that the 21st century sucks is because of the U.S. government because of the consensus in Washington, D.C. in 2002 and 2003 that they had to go and destroy Iraq and break it into a million little burning pieces of dead corpses. And so we have the rise of the Islamic State in the vacuum of what used to be the Ba'athist tyranny of Saddam Hussein. And I would have you read, and I hate the headline. The headline is stupid, okay? But don't blame Liz Sly for that, because I think people don't usually get to write their own headlines. But you should read this article in the Washington Post. And Liz Sly, she's a little bit conventional in her view. But then again, Patrick Coburn likes her and says, hey, at least she lives here. At least she knows what the hell she's talking about, even if her opinions are a little more statist-y than you kind of like. Her presumptions are a little, eh. But this is a really great piece of journalism, man. It really is. I think you should look at it. It's about the alliance between the Islamic State and the Ba'athists, the former officers who ran Saddam Hussein's army. And who's zooming who, who's the boss of who, who's using who to come out on top. And it's a really important piece. This explains, and this is as Mitchell Prothero especially has emphasized on this show since we started talking to him right about a year ago or so, that ISIS has made a deal with the Ba'athist generals, and they're running the military policy while the politics are handled by Caliph Ibrahim and his former fellow prisoners of Camp Buka. And but this is why they've had such military successes, because they're working with the former regime, the heads of the military. Anyway, you know, as like Patrick Coburn said, they're not going anywhere. They're doing nothing but expand. And now the Islamic State and their buddies in the al-Nusra Front, the so-called moderates, now al-Qaeda in Syria, they have begun an invasion. They've been there for quite a few days now, I guess, of the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp. Now, I know the Israelis will probably just let them all come home, right? Rather than let them be slaughtered by the Islamic State. Okay, I'm sorry. That wasn't funny. Yarmouk camp reaches out to the international community for help against ISIS invasion. You know, think you're going to have to figure out something else. It was the international community that armed up the Mujahideen to destroy you. I bet right now on channel whatever, Benjamin Netanyahu is crying that ISIS is Hamas. Hamas is ISIS. It's okay to murder hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of little children in their Gaza prison camp because they're ruled by Hamas in an election that I staged and basically rigged for them. Well, Olmert did before Netanyahu, but anyway. And so, since they're ruled by Hamas, they might as well be the same thing as ruled by ISIS, so it's okay to bomb them. Even though Israel, of course, supports the Mujahideen. At least al-Nusra, if not ISIS, in Syria. And now maybe this is payback. Hey, thanks, Israel, for all the guns. Here's our invasion and murder of the Yarmouk camp that you wanted. I don't know. Maybe not. But this is on the outskirts of Baghdad. Now, I've been telling you for 4 years, okay? And I'll just keep on saying it. If you think the war in Syria is bad now, imagine what would happen if they abolished the state entirely. If they disband the army. If they de-Ba'athify the government. It'll be a little bit opposite because it's mostly a Shiite and Christian and Alawite-backed Ba'ath party in Syria as opposed to a predominantly Sunni one like in Iraq, although they do have the merchant class, the more upper-class Sunni Arabs do support the state as well. All of these groups stand to get their heads cut off by Nusra and ISIS. And again, the split between Nusra and ISIS isn't that Nusra's nicer. The split is that they continue to take orders from Ayman al-Zawahiri, and ISIS decided to stop taking orders from Ayman al-Zawahiri. We don't want to wait for a caliphate. We want it now. Nusra fights for the territory. ISIS consolidates it. That's the difference. That's all. They're all a bunch of head-chopping September 11th and murderers. Even Caliph Ibrahim and his guys in the Islamic State, they just say screw Zawahiri, but they still invoke bin Laden and his goals. So, they say that Nusra's nicer. Well, they're the ones who are still loyal to Zawahiri and his goals. So how do you like that? And anyway, imagine now if the state is gone and every kind of Christian, the Maronites and the Assyrians and the whatever other Christian communities, the more secular Sunnis, the obviously the richer you are, the more interested you are in this life. And the Shiites and all the Alawites, all of them getting their heads cut off. Their daughters kidnapped and sold into slavery. This is what America and its allies are fighting for in Syria right now. Whenever they say train and arm the rebels, all they really mean is give money and weapons to the extremists. I'm such a damn broken record. I feel like, I'm sorry, I'm insulting you or something. Moderates don't fight in jihadi revolutions like what's going on in Syria right now. Head chopping, suicide bombing, bin Ladenite lunatics are the ones who've been leading that fight against Damascus this whole time. And everybody who ever said there was any moderate anything that could be used to get the job done was lying. As simple as that. It's just not true. Ooh, do I have time to play Hillary admitting it? No. Damn. Where is it?
Haida, Zawahiri is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm me, Scott. Scott Horton here, live noon to 2 Eastern Time on the Liberty Radio Network, Monday through Friday. I do KPFK on Sunday mornings, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Yesterday was Mohammed Sahimi on the Iran nuclear deal. You'll want to check the archives if you didn't get a chance to hear it. Our guest today on the show is our good friend Eric Margulies, who is always so gracious with his time. I'd say you say yes, you'll come on the show about 99% of the times I ask, Eric, and I sure do appreciate that. Welcome back.
Thanks, Scott. I always enjoy being on your show. It's nice talking to someone as learned and well-prepared as yourself.
Well, I'm trying. I did read the article. very interesting stuff, and thank you for knowing everything about everywhere on this planet. Who do I get to talk to about Nigeria? Yeah, try ericmargulies.com. That'll be first stop, and then you can go ahead and quit looking. Can Buhari rescue Nigeria from itself? Who is Buhari?
Well, Buhari is actually a general. He's a former general and a former president. He overthrew the Nigerian government back in decades ago, staged a coup. He was in power for a while. He said he was going to clean up the awful corruption that was there. He was a professional general. He was a man regarded as honest, which is very unusual in Nigeria. He didn't stay in office very long, but he left office unsullied and untainted by corruption. He didn't leave office with Mercedes and mansions and Swiss bank accounts. He was, as far as we know, an honest leader. He sat all these years watching Nigeria sink into more corruption. And he decided to run for president, and he won.
Now, isn't that interesting? A military dictator who overthrew the previous government, which I guess was not a democratically elected one, whoever it was he overthrew. But then with basically total power in his hands, he did a kind of pseudo George Washington and refused to just make it all about himself, left office willingly. Is that right? Or he was overthrown too, or what?
No, he left office willingly.
That's amazing.
He was very frustrated because making things happen in Nigeria, a giant federal state, of 170 million people with, I don't know, 400 different languages and dialects. I'm like,
wow.
Very difficult.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, and I don't mean that's amazing for Africa. I mean, that's amazing for all of humanity. I mean, that just almost never happens. So, as far as a politician goes, you sold me on this guy, and now he won a landslide against Good Luck Jonathan. Is that it?
That's correct. Good Luck Jonathan came to power in a rigged election. And he was an amiable chap, but he proved to be a complete zero as a president. And so Nigerians were fed up, and this is the first time that a sitting president has been defeated by a challenger in Nigeria's modern history, since 1960. So it was a revolution. He won by over 2 million votes. The election had all kinds of irregularities, as Nigerian elections usually do. But by and large, most people consider it a reasonably fair and decent election. People of Nigeria spoke, and they spoke saying they wanted a tough, competent leader.
Hey, did I ever tell you the story about how the guy that used to own the taxi cab I drove back, 12, 13 years ago now, wow. He was a chief of the Yayabo tribe, which I'm sure I'm saying incorrectly there. And I even met his father, who was the king of the, how do you say it?
Yorubas?
I guess so. Boy, I got it way wrong then. Yeah, them. He was the king, and I met him. He was sitting in a throne in the living room. Very nice throne. I should have taken pictures of it.
Should have gotten one for yourself. King Scott.
Wouldn't that be nice? No, it's really cool. All carved out of very fine wood and lion's heads and all these things on it, whatever. And he was an old, old man in his late 80s, I think, when I met him, his father. And anyway, yeah, I should try to track him down and talk with him a little bit about this. And I think he must have, I don't know, is that a Christian tribe or is that how it's divided?
Well, I'm not sure which tribe you're referring to. It sounds more like it was Muslims from the north, but hard to say.
Well, anyway, his father seemed like a nice guy, and he certainly was salt of the earth kind of guy, you know, jump in front of a bullet for you kind of a guy, really great guy. Anyway, so that's my little Nigeria story. There are a lot of Nigerians in Austin and a lot in the cab business, which I used to be in, and so. And they would fight, too, like really mad, all the different tribes anyway. Nigerians, as you say, is a very catch-all phrase for a lot of people. So now, you say in the article, too, how, and you may have just mentioned it, and I forgot already, that the predominantly Christian South actually came out and voted for this guy in great measure, too. That's how much that they respect him from before, huh?
That's right. And that's been amazing because there has been, you know, Nigeria is about 50-50 Catholic, Christian and Muslim. South is predominantly Christian, North is predominantly Muslim. They were completely different countries until the British amalgamated all of this area to create Nigeria, to secure its oil, strategic territory. And normally the Christians vote for a Christian president, like Good Luck Jonathan, and the Muslims vote for a Muslim candidate. But this time, remarkably, a lot of Christians decided to vote with their heads rather than their hearts.
Okay, now, so I think... I don't know. I think we'll probably have to pick up the subject of Boko Haram and all of that on the other side of the break. But in the meantime, could you talk a little bit about the, was it the 100th of 1% that gets to keep all the oil money through their state power while everybody else goes hungry or what? How's that work?
Well, Nigeria has been one of the poster child for corruptions and thievery. The almost all the money that Nigeria has made from its vast oil fields has been stolen. People have a lot of trouble pointing to anything that has been built with the proceeds of this oil treasure trove. The ecologically, the country is a disaster. The former capital, Lagos, is a horror show of traffic congestion and pollution and, nothing works very well in Nigeria, and everything runs on payoffs, known as dash, in Nigeria. So there tens of billions of dollars have been stolen, And all of the money, nearly all of the money, has gone either to Swiss banks or London property markets. And, you know, the Nigerians replied, said, well, yeah, we are big crooks. There's no doubt about it. But so are the people who take our money and hide it away. And they have a point.
Yeah. Now, you know, there was, do you remember that article by Sebastian Younger in Vanity Fair back in 07 about the guys in the Niger Delta who are getting all their oil stolen, and they were kidnapping the Shell executives, but then letting them go so that they would basically not brainwash them, but just explain to them how unfairly they were being treated. And then they would let the guys go, and they'd go back to Shell Oil saying, man, we're really doing the wrong thing here. And it was all about, of course, like you're saying, the corrupt and connected get to keep everything, and the people whose property actually sits on top of the oil get absolutely nothing. I was wondering if you know if those guys are even around anymore, because they were fighting. They had bought some rifles with some black market oil money, and they were fighting, and I wonder whether they even exist anymore now. I haven't heard from them in a while.
Scott, this is happening in the Niger Delta, which is particularly rich in oil, and it's an area of vast pollution done by the oil companies. There was a local who raised up a great protest group. His name was Ken Sarawiwa, and he was murdered, much like Brazilians who protest about the destruction of the Amazon forest. These ecological heroes, I call them, was killed. And that's sort of quieted down a bit, but I'm sure it's going to come back again, because the damage done to the Niger River Delta is terrible.
Yeah, man, and that article by Younger, they had painted little white circles on their arms. It was supposed to make them bulletproof, and I was thinking that's really just not going to work.
Well, that takes me back to the 60s of Congo.
Oh, no. Well, we'll pick that up on the other side of this break. Eric in the 60s in the Congo, y'all, right after this. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with the great Eric Margolese by way of the Skype here. And we're talking about the free and fair election of the new leader of Nigeria and the last guy stepping down without a fight. This is nice. It's not anarcho-capitalism, but it's progress. And then we're talking about related issues, of course, the oil and the wars. We're about to talk about Boko Haram in a minute, but you mentioned this in your article too about your time in the 1960s in the Congo, and you just mentioned that when I mentioned these guys fighting in the Niger Delta back 8 years ago now, who were painting these little white circles on themselves in the mystical belief that it would make them bulletproof in going up against the American-backed Nigerian army that was slaughtering them for resisting the theft of their oil. So tell us all about it. What were you doing in the Belgian Congo? Having a lot of fun?
Well, Scott, it was a wonderful time in the Congo. It was nominally granted independence by the Belgians, but everybody was fighting over it because it had oil and uranium, and there were breakaway provinces in the south, like Katanga, and the Belgians were financing all kinds of mercenaries, like the wonderful colorful characters like Mad Mike Hoare and Colonel Bob Denard, who routed these 100 white mercenaries, routed the whole Congolese army. There were the Simbas, who were backed by the communists. They were terrible people, a step away from being wild men, who painted their bodies in feathers and carried these amulets given to them by witch doctors, and they believe it would make them invulnerable. So it was a crazy period, but one reads now that mercenaries from South Africa, mainly from a unit called Crowbar, which I knew very well because I was with them up along the Limpopo River hunting ANC, African National Congress units, who were attacking farmers. they are very tough people. They're back in Nigeria now being employed because the Nigerian army is so useless and ineffective.
Yeah, now, about that, I think it's interesting, this Boko Haram group, that I read about this. The Boko doesn't mean Western education. It means deception. And then it came to mean Western education because the British, of course, and their sock puppets were always teaching these people that they're supposed to bend over and take it. And their idea is that, no, actually, we shouldn't. And those kind of untruths are forbidden around here. And so I always wonder, how do you fit the words Western education in Boko? You know,
I don't think much makes sense about that movement. And I've given up trying to figure out what they're all about. To me, they're a bunch of bush bandits, and they're using, like ISIS in Iraq and Syria, they're using the vocabulary of Islam to sort of weld together their movements and justify their actions. But what they really are is a very ugly reaction to the corruption and mismanagement, malfeasance that's been going on in Nigeria. I mean, with all the money being stolen from the country and the average Nigerian living on less than $2 a day, that puts them amongst the poorer people in the world. These people are out attacking and trying to exact revenge on government. Call them a Nigerian version of Cambodia's, you know, Pol Pot people, Khmer Rouge.
Yeah, well, and so I wonder about, you know, how much popular support they could possibly have. I mean, I've seen, it's kind of crazy, but in Iraq and in Syria, you got some bin Ladenite madmen that end up with, you know, more or less the support of the population because, I guess they're fearful, but also the other guys are worse, they think, that kind of thing. But on the other hand, you look at a bunch of crazies like this who, as you say, they're basically bandits, only way, way, way out of line. Maybe it'd be easy enough if the military got one good division together, just hunt these guys down and kill them and be done with it then, or what?
Well, the military's out of ammo. They don't have enough guns or vehicles that have all been stolen by their officers or never provided by the government. And it's interesting because beside these mercenaries in South Africa, the main fighting force opposing Boko Haram now is the Chadian army. And that's a whole nother fascinating story out of remote Chad in the wastes of the desert, a French protectorate equipped with French military equipment and French military advisors has turned out to be the most effective fighting force and is actually holding back Boko Haram while the Nigerian army is running away.
Yeah. And how many are there in Boko Haram, do you think?
Oh, nobody knows because they won't stand still long enough to be... I think they probably have perhaps maybe 5,000-7,000 people running around in a very large area.
Yeah, you know, I always wonder, you know, obviously this serves the war party, but I think I read some pretty good journalism, too, that was saying that when America chased the helped the Mujahideen take Libya, and then they went and chased the Tuaregs down into Mali in that war we talked about back in 2012, that at some point the Ansar al-Sharia local al-Qaeda affiliates in Libya ended up coming into contact with these Boko Haram guys and giving them new weapons and new training and some shoulder-fired RPGs and tactical advice and this kind of thing. Do you think that's really right?
I think so, yes. This militancy and anti-Western militancy spread across Sahara along the traditional caravan trails. When we overthrew the Libyan government, that released very large amounts of arms into the region. So we are reaping the whirlwind which we created. Let me add another point, Scott, if I may. I wasn't quite clear on General Buhari. He didn't initially give up office. He was ousted in another military coup or elbowed out of office, but then he came back into serving in the government later but announced that he was not going to launch any more coups, or didn't want to be president again. Well, he's changed his mind.
I see. Well, that's good. I'm glad we got that point of clarification in there, too. All right. Well, I'm sorry we didn't have time to talk about Yemen, but soon again, sir.
Next week.
All right. Great. Thanks very much, Eric. I sure
appreciate
it. Thanks,
Scott.
All right, y'all, that's the great Eric Margolis. He's the author of War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. His website is ericmargolis.com, and he also writes for lewrockwell.com and for UNZ.com. That's UNZ, UNZ.com. We'll be right back. Oh, no, we're not gone yet. See, I thought I was keeping him into the break there. Wait, aren't I? What the hell happened? Maybe I'm a minute ahead of my game here. All right. I thought I was just recording that outro for the outro or for the recording later. I didn't even know. I was still alive on that thing. All right, so I'll say this then real quick in the last few seconds that I know I have. Did you read the thing, or have you seen all the hype about the Rolling Stone rape story? It's an interesting article about how shoddy their journalism was. But can you think of any other important things they've been lying to you about other than this one girl's rape tale? Doesn't it seem kind of incongruous to you? Did I pronounce that right? I don't know. Hang on, man. I'll be back in a minute. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys. Yeah, get in a fight with a right-winger about Iran on Twitter and see how many tweets it takes before they have no idea what they're talking about. Yeah, one, maybe two. Now I'm being educated that Israel bombed Iran's nuclear facilities years ago. Yeah, no, only if you spell Iran I-R-A-Q. Advice. Don't contradict me. I will win. You are wrong. Give me a break. All right. Anyway, and now, listen, I kind of can't blame them because everybody knows that evil black Muslim Farrakhan devotee Barack Obama from Kenya works for Osama bin Laden to destroy our country from within. That's what right-wingers believe. When actually, no, he's a half-white, Harvard-educated, conservative, Democrat, corporatist, militarist, imperialist, fascist, like you. Oh, my God, I'm so sick of conservatives and the stupid things they believe. How stupid can you be? And now, it's true that he does believe in some liberal-ish type concepts and whatever, apparently. And panders to the left on some of those issues. But on what matters most, he's a right-wing conservative, corporatist, militarist, imperialist, fascist. Did I say them all in the same order twice? I hope so. That's what I was going for. I was ranking them in order of, I don't know what. All right. By the way, I saw the judge, Judge Napolitano, on Fox Business News today, and it was great, man. He was having a great time, and the British guy interviewing him was not having a great time at all. And he's talking about how over there in England, when somebody says that they like ISIS, well, we'll put you in prison for hate speech, or we'll just deport you, and if you leave the country, we won't let you come back in, and all these new measures, and we'll read all your emails and do whatever we want. And Napolitano's like, well, yeah, but so what? In England, they don't have a constitution. We have a constitution with a Bill of Rights, and what it says is this, 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 and this, pal. You can't just take people's rights away because it's convenient for you. And it was funny because the British guy doing the interview, you know who I'm talking about, the Fox Business News British guy? He's getting all upset. Yeah, but judge, what I want. And he says, oh, you and your radical libertarianism, but that to the side. And the judge says, no, nothing I'm saying right here is libertarian. It's just straight Supreme Court decisions. I don't know what else to tell you. You can't lock people up for what they say. Not in the United States of America, pal. And you can't just put them in prison or strip them of their citizenship and kick them out of the country and exile them without due process of law, because that's the law. And the Fox News guy's going, yeah, but ISIS, yeah, but fear. And I love Napolitano. He's just such a gregarious sort of a guy. He's just laughing, and he's just like, I don't care about your emotions, dude. Sorry. You lose. And the problem, of course, is that it's not so black and white. I mean, the truth is these all of our freedoms are under terrible assault, and mostly in the name of the terror war. But Napolitano, he was just laughing. He's like, dude... And the guy's all, like, getting more and more serious. And Napolitano doesn't notice that the guy's getting angry, that he's laughing at him and mocking him. He just keeps on. This is great, man. I like Napolitano. And I don't always like his articles, because sometimes I think he ain't quite radical enough, or maybe kind of glosses over a couple things sometimes or something. But, boy, for a legal commentator on Fox News, you got to give him 10 stars, man. I mean, he's just great. You got to love him. I'm glad they don't ask him about war. They kick him right off of there like they did when they canceled his show for covering foreign policy too much back when he had a show. But anyway, it was good. But now, speaking of ISIS, they are horrible bastards. They are just absolutely horrible. And there's a terrible war going on in Iraq right now and in Syria, too. I was talking about Syria a little bit earlier. But in Tikrit, it's their mirror image. The Badr Brigades, the ISIS of the Shiite side, of the pro-Iran side, are having their revenge. And now, as Jason Ditz is reporting, there are still many hundreds of ISIS guys left in Tikrit, and the battle is not over. They have taken some major parts of Tikrit. It's not entirely complete, he says here. Hundreds remain in northern, in the northern part of the city. This is Saddam Hussein's hometown. But... looting and lynching. This is the other report, news.antiwar.com. Looting and lynching post-ISIS Tikrit, an ugly sight indeed. After a month-long siege, Shiite militias run amok, and they're just running around carrying out lynchings, cutting people's throats, and murdering them, and acting just like ISIS. This is a big part of the reason that ISIS is so successful, is because of the years of civil war, of losing the civil war against the Shiite militias. And you know, they are the 60% majority of the country who were terribly oppressed under the minority Sunni dictatorship under Saddam Hussein. But it still wasn't America's business to turn it around the other way. And it certainly wasn't America's business to stay and let the American Army and Marine Corps and Air Force and Navy too, to put them at the beck and call of these Shiite militias. The Badr Brigade, if you read in the WikiLeaks where America's turning people over to be tortured, they're turning them over to the Badr Brigade. The Wolf Brigade was just their special forces group. And these are guys who, for 3-4 years, were torturing Sunnis to death with power drills, leaving their corpses on the side of the road stacked like cordwood. And that's what it took to... cleanse, as they call it, Baghdad of the Sunni Arabs. Millions of them had to be forced out of their homes, with America thinking, I guess, the Americans, that the Badr Brigade was working for them, but really, of course, it was the other way around. And then when they were done winning, they said, now you can get the hell out too. We got Iran next door, and we got the capital city. Now, they're being made to take Tikrit by their American-backed, really did a coup, got rid of Maliki, Bush's choice, and put in Obama's choice, Abadi, who's from the same Dawa party, the same sock puppets of Iran party. But he's decided that in exchange for American air power, he'll carry out American goals. So now they've taken Tikrit. And then what's the first thing they do? They commit a bunch of PR stunts to let the rest of the Sunnis of former Iraq know that, yeah, we're coming to murder you too. That you've got no hope but to rally behind ISIS. War is the health of the state, you understand. You rally behind the Islamic State because they're the only ones who can protect you from us, says the Badr Brigade, backed by Iran and backed by the United States of America. And no, you right-wingers, you don't get to pat yourselves on the back. This isn't Obama's treason. This is Obama continuing to carry out George Bush's treason. That's all it is. America has been fighting for the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution and their Badr Brigade and the Dawah Party and their political sock puppets, the tiny tools of the Iranians, since March 2003. That whole time, you were repeating slogans about how we're fighting for the people of Iraq against the terrorists. No, you were fighting for the Shiite majority against the minority. And not just the Shiite minority. The Iranian-backed political parties. The Iranian-armed and trained militias. And they are some mean bastards. And they are nothing but the mirror image of the Islamic State. The Islamic State was created, grew from Zarqawi's group of a few hundred, you know, couple of few bandits into this giant thing in the name of protection from those Shiites that America put in power in Baghdad in that 8-year war. And this thing is going to rage on. And again, America is Iran's. And their sock puppet militias, Air Force, at least. And, of course, our spies and special forces, too, over there. So, yeah. Join up now. Buy Lockheed stock now. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Huh. All right, so the Houthis urge ceasefire and peace talks. I guess no surprise there. They've been getting the crap bombed out of them. I love arguing with conservatives. I am becoming unhinged. I am confused. She hasn't contradicted me a single time. She provided no links whatsoever. I hate conservatives. They're so stupid. Let's see. One thing, real quick. Yeah, go ahead and block me. You're going to have to block me because I'm going to keep answering back. Screw you. All right, sorry. That's bad radio, I know, but I'm addicted to Twitter, dude. Soon enough, 2017, 2018, I'm going to have a Twitter chip in my brain. I'm just going to do nothing but scream at strangers about what stupid idiots they are all day. For God's sake, man, you're so stupid. Anyway, yeah, man, so, Yemen. Yemen's Houthis urge ceasefire and peace talks. Yeah, they've been getting the crap bombed out of them by the Saudis, with, of course, America coordinating the whole thing from our AWACS and ships offshore. Top Houthi political figure Salah al-Samad today expressed the faction's openness toward peace talks with the Saudi Arabian-led coalition, provided that the attacks on Yemen halt. We have no conditions except a halt to the aggression and sitting on the dialogue table within a specific time period, Samad said, saying they would also like a neutral party to oversee the dialogue. The Russian government is probably a prime candidate for this, as one of the few nations trying to push a humanitarian ceasefire to allow the Red Cross to deliver aid. Negotiations are unlikely, however, as the Saudi government has ruled out any end to airstrikes unless former President Hadi is restored to power. Though Samad once served as a top advisor to Hadi, he insisted Yemenis do not support the return of the former military leader. And apparently they're working with Salah, who was the previous American-backed sock puppet before Hadi, who who warred against the Houthis for quite some time, but apparently has some army divisions of Houthis who are, or led by Houthis anyway, who are still loyal to him. And the Telegraph, the British Telegraph, had a piece all about that. Certainly worth looking at. And then, this is really the most important point. Civilians are taking the brunt of the Saudi war on Yemen. Locals report growing shortages in major cities. 11 days, this is from, what, yesterday or day before? Yesterday. News.antiwar.com. 11 days into the Saudi war on Yemen, hundreds of Yemeni civilians have been killed, seemingly a solid majority of the casualties in the ongoing air war, and life is becoming difficult both for the internally displaced and for those who stayed put. Locals in major cities are warning of growing shortages, with food becoming scarcer and most basic services halted. Gas stations are all running on empty, and what shops remain are facing looting from a panicked populace. Saudi officials are trying to blame the situation on the power vacuum in Yemen since the resignation of Hadi, who they intend to reinstall militarily. Yet Hadi resigned in January, and other than an abortive unresignation and an attempt to claim the city of Aden, he hasn't had anything to do with day-to-day operations for months, even before his resignation. Yemen is the poorest country in the Middle East, so things were never running spectacularly. But the sudden shortages and lack of basic services cropped up almost immediately after the Saudis began attacking. And it's no coincidence that the Saudis have blocked the Red Cross from delivering humanitarian aid to the country during what is becoming one of their worst crises in recent memory. And then, so what time is it? Man, I am going to go ahead and get to this. What's more important than this? It's Patrick Coburn. He's the spotlight at antiwar.com today. The article's at unzuns.com and also at The Independent, although you might get stuck behind the paywall, at theindependent.co.uk. A young prince may cost Syria and Yemen dear. And I won't be able to finish this, but hopefully I'll be able to convince you to go and read the rest by the end. The great Patrick Coburn. As the U.S. and Iran reach accord, Saudi Arabia endangers the status quo in the Middle East. A succession of crucially important military and diplomatic events are convulsing the political landscape of the Middle East. The most significant development is the understanding between the U.S. and five other world powers with Iran on limiting Iran's nuclear program in return for an easing of sanctions. But the muting of hostility between the U.S. and Iran, a destabilizing feature of Middle East politics since the overthrow of the Shah in 1979, may not do much to stem the momentum toward ever greater violence in Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. In any case, the benefits of a U.S.-Iran agreement may be slow to come, if they come at all, as the Republicans in Congress, the Saudis, and Israel try to torpedo it. And even if an accord is ratified and implemented, President Obama could be hedged in by its opponents from further cooperation with Iran and other parts of the Middle East. Well, I don't want him cooperating with them. How about just stop the Cold War? We ain't got to lie with them anymore in Iraq, man. Enough of that. Anyway. In contrast to this snail's pace rapprochement, the crises in Yemen and Syria are getting worse by the day, and in Iraq, for all the government's claims to have captured Tikrit, its forces are still only nibbling at the outer defenses of the Islamic State. Saudi Arabia and the Gulf monarchies have the greatest self-interest in maintaining the status quo in the region, something they have been fairly successful in doing in the past. Who would have predicted in the late 50s that Arab nationalist and socialist movements would pass away? But Saudi Arabia would remain the theocratic absolute monarchy it has always been. Well, any Misesian libertarian would have predicted the end of socialism. I don't know about the rest of it. Anyway, what is striking about developments in the past few weeks is that it is Saudi Arabia that is seeking radical change in the region and is preparing to use military force to secure it. In Yemen, it has launched a devastating air war. And in Syria, it is collaborating with Turkey to support extreme jihadi movements led by Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda affiliate that last week captured its first provincial capital. The Saudis are abandoning their tradition, of pursuing extremely cautious policies, using their vast wealth to buy influence, working through proxies and keeping close to the U.S. In Yemen, it is the Saudi Air Force that is bombarding the Houthis, along with Yemeni army units still loyal to President Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was once seen as the Saudis and Americans' man in Sana'a, the Yemeni capital. As with many other air campaigns, the Saudis and their Gulf Cooperation Council allies are finding that airstrikes without a reliable military partner on the ground do not get you very far. But if Saudi ground forces are deployed in Yemen, they will be entering a country that has been as much of a quagmire as Afghanistan and Iraq. The Saudis are portraying their intervention as provoked by Iranian-backed Shia Zaydis, who are trying to take over the country. Much of this, writes Patrick Coburn at UNS.com, is propaganda. The Houthis, who come from the Zaydi tribes in Yemen's northern mountains, have an effective military and political movement called Ansar Allah, modeled on Hezbollah in Lebanon. They have fought off six government offenses against them since 2004, all launched by former President Saleh, then aligned to the Saudis. Saleh, himself a Zaydi, but drawing his support from the Zaydi tribes around the capital, Sana'a, was a casualty of the Arab Spring in Yemen, but still has the support of many army units. Why has Saudi Arabia plunged into this morass, pretending that Iran is pulling the strings of the Shia minority, though its role is marginal? The Zaydis, estimated to be a third of the 25 million Yemeni population, are very different Shia from those in Iran and Iraq. In the past, there has been little Sunni Shia sectarianism in Yemen, but the Saudi determination to frame the conflict in sectarian terms may be self-fulfilling. Part of the explanation may lie with the domestic politics of Saudi Arabia. Madawi al-Rashid, a Saudi visiting professor at LSE's Middle East Center, says in the online magazine Al Monitor that Saudi King Salman's defense minister and head of the royal court, his son Mohammed bin Salman, aged 30, wants to establish Saudi Arabia as absolutely dominant in the Arabian Peninsula. She adds caustically that he needs to earn a military title, perhaps destroyer of Shiite rejectionists and their Persian backers in Yemen, to remain relevant among more experienced and aspiring siblings and disgruntled royal cousins. A successful military operation in Yemen would give him the credentials he needs. Imagine that, a politician who only cares about himself. A popular war would help unite Saudi liberals and Islamists behind a national banner, while dissidents could be pilloried as traitors. Victory in Yemen would compensate for the frustration of Saudi policy in Iraq and Syria, where the Saudis have been outmaneuvered by Iran. In addition, it would be a defiant gesture toward a U.S. administration they see as too accommodating toward Iran. We're out of time. That's it. Go read Patrick Coburn's The Spotlight today on antiwar.com. See you tomorrow.